Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Coming up in this edition of the TV Black Box podcast, one of the biggest sport bidding wars is about to begin, and Australian television will never be the same. Netflix dropped Meghan Markle as the streamer's share price goes into freefall. And should TV hosts ever apologise for having an opinion? This is TV Black Box, the podcast. No, that's not what we usually say. Welcome to the podcast where people in the industry get their news. This is TV Black Box.
It's your first time, it's fine.
It wasn't in the order queue.
No, you'll get there. You'll get there, sweetie.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Hello, I'm Rob McKnight. I'll introduce the panel in just a wee moment. But first, it was during this week in television history that saw the birth of an icon. Yes, it was 1957 and Australia was introduced to In Melbourne Tonight, hosted by the King, Graham Kennedy. Many legends worked on the show, including Pete Smith, Bert Newton and writer Mike McCall-Jones. The original series ran for 13 years on the Nine Network, and what a show it was. Let's meet the panel. Hello to our good friend Sarah Monahan in some part of the US. I think you're in Texas with the rattlesnakes this week, Sarah.
Yes. Just went to take the dog outside and there was a big old rattlesnake just slithering through my patio furniture. So I'm ready to leave.
Wow. As you would expect, Aaron Ryan's over in Perth for us. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, gorgeous people. Nice to be back.
Philip Kosh, magazine writer for New Idea and Women's Weekly and many more, I'm sure. Hello, Philip.
I've never written for Women's Weekly.
Did I say Women's Weekly?
So bluntly.
They would think I was being very uppity if you said that. They really would.
Should have notes, Rob.
They would.
Sorry, my apologies. Woman's Day. Let's get it right. And Matthew Simmons is a contributor for TV Black Box. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. Nice to get the call up. Thank you.
Glad you're here filling in for Malk. And David Robbo Robinson, television presenter extraordinaire. Hello to you, sir.
Hello, Rob. Hello, everyone. I'm really excited. I know that we're doing a podcast. There's not a lot of vision, but Channel 7 has started selling merchandise, and it's kind of retro merchandise. And I've got one here. I'm going to show everyone. This is my tote bag.
Good old
with
Lucky
the
7 logo.
Lucky 7. It's the 1980s logo of Channel 7 with the rainbow, and I've got it on a tote bag. It is amazing. They're selling other things like hats and wonderful memorabilia. I love it. I'm so excited. So check that out.
I want one of those.
It's so good, isn't it?
That was the symbol that I started at Seven Under until we went to that double red thing.
I love the double red thing too. I'm actually getting a double red hat for my birthday. I hope someone's listening to that. But it's very exciting. Check it out. I love it. People were saying bad things about it actually as well, saying, oh, Seven must need the money. I keep love-hearting the post whenever I see it on Facebook. I think it's amazing. I'm so excited about it. Thank you, Lucky 7-7.
Good times. And while we're talking about retro, to go back to our On This Day story, you might remember Adam Boland paid an extraordinary amount
for the crown,
worn by Graham Kennedy, the prop. It wasn't a real crown. Well, it was a real crown. It was just not made of anything valuable. He paid, reportedly, $20,000 for that crown. He had it in a glass container. And you know what I did the first time I saw it in his place? I lifted up that glass container and I put it on my head. I said, wow, look at this. And he said, I've never worn it, Rob, but have fun with that.
Bless his cotton
socks. Kind of
socks.
Like Kim Kardashian wearing a Marilyn Monroe gown, isn't it?
Oh, very topical at the Met, yeah. It was quite interesting to see that. But let's get into the big news stories of the week, because while streakers are no strangers to the AFL, streamers are, and we could see the national game coming soon on the World Wide Web. The AFL has announced they are meeting with Amazon, YouTube, and the owner of Network 10, Paramount. Viewer numbers on 7 and Foxtel are down as much as 15%, and that has prompted the move to shop the game to streaming companies. The Age reports the AFL privately believes 7's broadcast is tired and needs to be rejuvenated. Wow, that's interesting. That is very, very interesting. But Aaron, I'll tell you what's more interesting to me. I think it's, you say what you like about the coverage. To me, this is a big play by 10. We know that the chief executive of the AFL travelled in the same plane as Beverly McGarvey over to LA to meet with the bosses at Paramount. This is how serious this is. 10 are going to go big or they're going to go home. And I think this is one of the smartest plays by this company for years. If they really dig in and reportedly are willing to spend $2.5 billion for a five-year contract to have the AFL on Channel 10 and Paramount Plus, well, this is a game changer.
I agree with you. As we've seen in the ratings, 10 cannot keep their foot in the sporting pool with second-tier sports like A-League. It's a disaster, and they'd be better off having no sport at all. So going for the AFL is no brainer. Now, interestingly, under the current legislation, if Paramount were to bid for the rights under Paramount Plus, that could mean that the AFL, including the AFL Grand Final, could be under a subscription model and would bypass the entire anti-siphoning legislation. But Paramount could also secure a model where they could have some games on free-to-air in the same way Seven does with Friday Night Football and all that, and then all the rest of the games on Paramount Plus, and completely wipe out Foxtel. Now, this is absolutely a possibility. This could happen. So it's a really big deal.
I don't think Paramount would be looking to take the AFL Grand Final away from free-to-air. I think that would be too much to scare the horses. To me, this is a play not only for Paramount Plus, but securing 10's future. We know, Robbo, the ratings that 7 generates by having the AFL. 10 is completely out of the picture. It provides a promotion platform for 7 having the AFL, 9 having the NRL. I think this is a play for both free-to-air and streaming.
Yeah, 100%, Rob. The other thing we've got to remember is that James Warburton, the CEO of the 7 Network, said some time ago that 10 is basically a streaming platform and that's the only way that they'll survive. It kind of looks as if they're doing that exact thing by making a play for this. Is this not something that we're seeing at the beginning where they do this and, like you say, they won't go for the grand final, but they will dip their toe in the pool at the beginning? I think this is really smart decision-making, because let's face it, we can beat around the bush as much as we want. Free-to-air television as we know it is not going to exist for a much longer time. They certainly won't get another 60 years. So if there is a network or a streaming service that can go in and say, look, let's just jump the gun now, let's jump the shark, let's put it on streaming, and I think they will be the winners in the future. We could see a time where 10, for the first time in the history of television, will be at front. They had a little bit of time in the 90s, but this might be the time where they actually branch out and be the winners of a dying industry.
To be honest, I think the only problem with that is that they don't have the programming depth to back it up. So, yes, I think they could be a contender for second, having such strong programming with AFL, sure. So they don't have the rest of the week sorted out.
I agree with you, yeah.
Be able to claim a number one spot. So sure. If 9 have the NRL and 10 had the AFL, that squeezes 7, who does have a depth of programming. Mm-hmm. 7 doesn't just rely on the AFL for good numbers, although it certainly gives it a lift in the back half of the week. But it's got a strong news base. It's got strong programming with Home and Away. It's got strong franchises. Mm-hmm. So it would still be a neck-and-neck race. The big question, Philip, is how deep James Warburton would go with his pockets. Is there a price point where he says it is just not worth it? 7 are posting, they've just announced today that they are increasing their revenue forecast. So they are actually doing very, very well, and they have turned that company around from the debt that it was burdened with. So the company is being is in good shape because of the decisions it's making, but there is a cutoff point when it comes to sporting rights, as successful as those brands are.
Well, I think it also becomes it's a bit like the Kyle and Jackie O thing when they shifted from one broadcaster to another. It wasn't so much what they brought to the new broadcaster, it was what they took away from the previous one. And yes. I think that's a similar situation here. Can Seven afford to lose the AFL? Probably, but, you know, it's unknown territory. What happens then, you know? And one network's building an audience, one's losing an audience. I don't know. I think he will fight to the death to keep it. But that said, if you talk to AFL people, Channel 7 hasn't shown the AFL a lot of respect. You know, they didn't play some of those AFL footy shows during the pandemic. You know, people are quite disgruntled in AFL circles with Channel 7. So
interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if they love the AFL. Certainly AFL people don't think they love the AFL.
Hmm. Which is interesting because it's been Seven's core building block for so long. I don't really cover the sports side of things, so I'm intrigued to hear that, I will be honest. I think AFL is very valuable to Seven, but we've seen Seven walk away from rights before when it hasn't been a good return on investment. But 10 need to do something like this, or it will be a dead brand within 5 years. This is not only life support, this is really a second life. This is like having a transfusion of blood. If 10 pull this off, I will literally tip my hat to Bev McGarvey and the team, because this is the kind of thinking they need to survive.
Agreed.
But you can also be guaranteed that Channel 7's going to ram that price up through the roof if 10 get it.
Sure. All right, well, still speaking about sport, and it's the biggest sporting event that only rolls around every 4 years, and with the 2032 Brisbane Olympics only 10 years away, the networks are racing to claim the Australian television broadcast rights. Both 7 and 9 are quietly preparing for a possible crack at nabbing all of the next three Summer and Winter Olympics, with the International Olympic Committee expected to launch a formal tender later this year for a long-term rights deal. 9 and 7 are believed to be considering their options about moving forward with such a deal, which would take them to the Brisbane 2032 Games. According to The Australian, 7 boss Kerry Stokes enjoyed a private lunch on Sunday with IOC President Thomas Buck, who was also meeting with the Brisbane organising team. Now, that follows reports that 9 executives, including today's show co-host Karl Stefanovic, were travelling to the IOC headquarters in Switzerland to lobby for the broadcast rights to the next three Summer Games. But of course, the event is enormously expensive, with Australian networks having always struggled to recoup their outlay on games broadcast rights. Seven is understood to have lost $50 million in the Tokyo Olympics last year, but the event was a runaway rating success, which helped lift audience numbers for the network's other primetime programs in the subsequent months, and eventually saw it win the 2021 ratings battle. All right. This is an interesting one, Matthew. Seven love the Olympics. They have basically always wanted to be part of it. The games are expensive. Again, we come to return on investment. But when Seven had the 2000 Sydney Olympic Games, nobody was watching anything else. It was a homegrown event. All the events are in the right time. The local broadcaster will see benefit from having 2032 games.
Absolutely. And I certainly don't blame the IOC for going, hey, here's a long-term deal. Take our other games that aren't going to be as high of a rating success, so that way you can get Brisbane 2032, which is just going to be massive. It's going to be massive on streaming platforms, or whoever gets it. So Seven's got to be the one that is going to throw the most money in the ring, just because they've been hungry for it for so long and they've had all these other Olympics. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's just going to be a battle, 7 and 9. I don't know who else would take it unless it's going to be one of those streamers like the AFL. And it is going to end up being Prime Video with some mega million bid.
If we're talking about Olympic Games in 2032 in Brisbane, if any of the free-to-air networks are still going to hope that they can broadcast that without any kind of pay-per-view, they're idiots. In 10 years, broadcast television will not be what it is now. So if they're not also in the background saying there needs to be a subscription to the Games in 10 years' time, then they are idiots. And they deserve the low ratings and they deserve to lose money. That's my thought here.
But they're thinking about streaming and subscription options. Well, they need to be, though, Rob. 7+ at the last Olympics.
Which I understand that, but there needs to be this thing of, yeah, you can see some of it for whatever is broadcast television in 10 years. But if you think about how far we've come in the past 10 years, where 10 years ago it was a very different environment, you're now looking at something which is going to be much quicker and grow much faster in the next 10 years. If 7 thinks, or 9 or 10 thinks that, oh yeah, we'll do the classic kind of free-to-air option, they're idiots. It just won't be there anymore. The market is so much about watching what they want, when they want, and not just on free-to-air. It's silly to think that it's going to be the same broadcast model.
Well, no, Robert, you're right. They are buying streaming rights already. So I think the only difference is you're talking about a payment option where subscribers pay for it.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have to think that at the moment, events like the Olympics are on the anti-siphoning list and do have to be made free-to-air. But who knows where the industry will be in 10 years' time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think TV will still be hanging on by its claws, but it'll be interesting to see. And, Sarah, I mean, NBC have had the Olympics for a long time, but there are concerns within that organisation that they're just too expensive.
Yeah, I don't think that you really make your money back on the Olympics
anymore.
You don't. And so I think either you pay for the bits that you want to see, or like most people, you go to a bar and it's a social thing and you watch the event that you want with your friends while you're out doing something. But I don't know anyone who just sits at home and watches the Olympics on their own.
There are lots. There are lots of people who essentially put aside 2 weeks when the Olympics are on and pretty much
watch
everything.
Maybe for the male gymnasts and the divers, but that's about it.
Swimmers, track, soccer, you know.
Goodness me. All right. Officially, she may be the Duchess of Sussex, but Meghan Markle could now be known as the Duchess of Disappointment. The Great Kingdom of Netflix has decided to execute one of Meghan's upcoming projects. It was set to be an animated series which followed the adventures of a 12-year-old girl and her interactions with influential women throughout history. While details behind the cancellation are scarce, it's believed to be in response to the streaming giant losing hundreds of thousands of subscribers. The Duchess has yet to comment. This story, Sarah, I can't think of any other producer who could have pitched an idea where a 12-year-old girl in anime meets women in our history. Like, it's only because she's the bloody Duchess of Sussex, and even that shine is rubbing off and there's brass, rusted old brass underneath. Like,
well, I mean, they haven't produced anything. It was like a $200 million contract. And then finally, the only reason they visited, you know, Gangan a couple weeks ago was because Netflix told them they had to. So, like, and then I think people are finally working out that nobody gives a fuck about Meghan except for
Meghan?
A few people in America who are like, yay, she's ruining the monarchy, and that's it. And it's like, you know, they have a whole joke about enact 17, whatever it is. So it's like, but I think, like, at first it was like, oh, it's cute, and now everyone's like, they don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They add no value.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so woke. Like, do we want to see anything that they make?
Well, here's the problem. Netflix, to me, had this celebrity cult going on where they just wanted to have big names associated with the brand. They were starfuckers, that's the term I'm thinking of. Well, they were. And, Aaron, so they've been spending lots of money just to have this association with President Barack Obama, Meghan Markle, Prince Harry. And now that the stock price has plummeted, what was it, $54 billion it plummeted by, they're cutting costs. And the shine has come off Netflix. What we're seeing here is the decisions being reversed that they shouldn't have made in the first place. And they're actually having to look at what they're doing and realise the Netflix way of life is changing with more competition and they don't have the breadth of content. And their originals, they actually changed their strategy as far as what they were doing with originals. And I've been hearing quite a few interviews. I know this is a long-winded question. Sorry, I will get to you in a moment, Aaron. But it was interesting. I heard the creator of Friends, who is also the creator and producer of Frankie and Grace on Netflix, and she was talking about how, because they've done 96 episodes, I think it is, or maybe 196, I can't remember, but she's done the most episodes on Netflix than any other show. And she was saying that during her time, it has changed. It was a content-led platform, and now it's about revenue. It's about algorithms. It's trying to create niche products for niche audiences, but the niche audiences aren't there. It's on KCRW's The Business, that interview. If you want to hear it, it's the latest episode. KCRW's The Business is a fantastic podcast that focuses on the TV and film industry in LA with Kim Masters, who is one of the big wigs at The Hollywood Reporter. Great podcast, especially if you love the industry and want to know about it. Aaron, Netflix has really lost its way.
Yeah, they have. That Grace and Frankie that you're talking about is 94 episodes.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were talking, I think, about last week or the week before about this exact thing, and I think you got shot down a little bit from Malk about this. But then, yeah, as soon as the revenues drop and the subscriber numbers drop, then bang, look what happened. They're getting rid of those big names, like you're saying, and some of these big shows. The only thing I'll add to that is one of the other sort of bigger stories to this, which I suppose people don't talk about as much, is that on Netflix, those sitcoms that are licensed have been very, very popular.
Yes.
But they're getting taken off on Netflix now. Already Friends has been removed from Netflix in America. It's going back to Warner, and then they'll use that for HBO Max. They had the Star Trek shows. They're going back to Paramount Plus. So all of those sitcoms that were, you know, building up Netflix as well are going to be going back to, you know, the places where, you know, for the original production companies, and then going to their own streaming services. So Netflix are in real trouble, aren't they?
They really are. Sarah, you're in America. Have you noticed a decline in content and quality with the programming in Netflix over there, not being able to see Friends and things like that?
So we normally just stick with Netflix because at the ranch, that's what, like, we have shitty internet, and Netflix actually streams better than any of the other services. Mm. But we just broke down and got Paramount Plus and Apple TV. So, yeah, because we were like, we're going through and it's like we've literally watched everything that's anything on Netflix, and now we're like branching out to other streaming services just to see stuff. And like, we'll even tolerate the two ads that are in NCIS on Paramount Plus because it's something new, because Netflix has run out of things and there's not that much on there anymore.
Well, how can you have 32,000 different pieces of content and still have nothing to watch? That is amazing. Yeah. And I will be honest, that line is actually from the creator of Friends. And, you know, she made that point in the KCRW podcast everyone must go and listen to.
I will say, though, I do like all their foreign stuff. Because, you know, you had Money Heist, you had Squid Games. There was a really good Mexican one called Who Killed Sarah. That the first two seasons are good, but the third season looks like it's like going off the rails. But so if you can get into there, and then they do have an entire Australian section, so I give them that. But if you're into international stuff, you can probably find new things to watch, but otherwise there's not much.
Well, I have a theory that I would be worried if I was an executive content creator in other parts of the world outside the US right now working for Netflix. I would be worried about possible cuts. Unless your territory is producing content that is traveling really well around the world, like Squid Games, I think you're going to be in trouble, because I think for Netflix, it's all about the US market. The world is secondary. Everything is about the US market. And if they've got a $54 billion wipe of their share market price and they need to make more content, they will take the money allocated for content overseas and bring it into the US market, which means that for places like Australia, if the content being created here doesn't meet expectations, I think there will be big changes at Netflix where we will lose the Australian arm, and I don't want to see that. But I think we have to be honest, Robbo, Byron Bay's, by my account, was a flop.
No, hold on. It was a flop because it wasn't good content. Now, you can spin that any way that you want. You can say that you're not getting it or that you don't understand it or you're not in with it.
No, you mean we can be told we're not getting it.
That's right. But we weren't getting it. It was bad content, bad production, bad casting. If they wanted to do what they wanted to do, they could have done it better. They just didn't. And I'm going to go back to that for a moment in regards to Netflix. I think that with Meghan Markle, they were all very excited. You used the staff term before, which I won't repeat now. It's a family show, and I won't do that now. I stole that from Dame Edna. But
it's a family show, darling.
That's right. I think that the problem here is that Meghan Markle's production company, I think it's Archwell. I don't even know how to say it. Is that right?
No. I think it's actually Show Me the Money Well.
Yeah, that's right. But what happened was, I would have thought that you would have jumped on it very quickly and made the content as quickly as possible. The idea that this has been in development since the middle of last year or last year is the problem. I think that Netflix were a bunch of star fuckers. I think that they thought, oh, we're getting Barack Obama, we're getting the Duchess of Sussex. This is all very important, very exciting. And then nothing came from it. I think that's the problem. So a year ago, they had a much better brand than they do now. The brand has gone, so Netflix understandably has pulled the carpet out from underneath them, and I think
there's going to be a lot of pressure on Heartbreak High locally, because if that doesn't work, you might as well call in the morgue, because there will be some dead bodies.
Which I agree with. But it's the same thing as Byron Bay's. I think for a while Netflix has gone, here's some money, and hasn't really looked at the content of what they're doing. So if you looked at Byron Bay's, you'd go, that's a lot of money. No, we're not going to do that. There was also a local movie, and forgive me, our listeners will know, that was the first Australian production of Netflix, which was a supernatural kind of surfer girl.
The one about the mermaids?
Yeah, mermaids.
Tidelands.
Yeah, which was absolutely awful, but Netflix threw money at it. So in a way, I don't have any kind of sympathy for Netflix, because they've just gone, oh my God, you want an Australian mermaid show? Great, here's $40 million. No, like that, you can't do that.
But they did also get rid of Space Force, which had, I can't imagine how much Steve Carell and all those people cost.
Yeah, agree.
And the first season was funny because it was like right after the election and they were making fun of Trump. Mm-hmm. And then the second season was okay. But it was like, I think they forgot that half their audience are in red states.
Yeah.
And there's a huge push again for Trump to run for the next election.
Oh, he's running. He told Piers Morgan. Well, he told him without telling him. That's
so you were the one watching.
I watched it too.
But that's the problem too, is if you're making it's funny, but only for half the US. The other half were deeply offended by it.
Yeah.
If you're making stuff that is too far one direction, you're immediately alienating half your audience, you know, and unfortunately the red states are also the ones who invest in the stock market.
Very true. All right, let's get to the ratings race, because we're starting to see a familiar pattern, with Seven taking another week off the back of The Voice. Last week, Team Red was on top with a 31.6% share. Team Blue had 27.3%. Down the back end, 10 had 17.1, ABC was on 15.5, and SBS had 8.6. 7 took the primary channel as well with 22.6, 9 on 19.2. The ABC moved into third position with 11.1, and Channel 10 was in fourth place with 11%. SBS was on 4.8, and 7mate and then 7.2 were the top two multi-channels yet again. In the morning, there has been some concern for the Today Show. ABC News beat Today on Tuesday, 189,000 to 184,000, very tight. Sunrise, though, was well ahead at 237,000. Matthew, it's an interesting week at the moment. We're seeing, you know, this battle between Lego, The Voice and MasterChef. They're getting uplifts in catch-up. But we're about to hit a new phase with the introduction of Big Brother, which I am very, very excited about.
Yeah, and, you know, someone wrote a great article on TV Black Box about how good it is. And I've seen the first episode. I haven't gotten around to the second one yet.
Well, this was for my binge box, but I have seen the first two episodes of Big Brother, and I genuinely believe this is the best series ever. I didn't watch VIP. I had no interest. It did not get me in. It turned me off. Mm. But what they have done with the casting and bringing the OG housemates in mixed with new ones, and I know this is a trait that's been used on a lot of shows, but it works to so much effect here, Matthew. Mm.
And it's epic, really. As someone who grew up with the family watching Big Brother and, funnily enough, skipping last year just because I did too. Yeah, well, I skipped VIP and the normal series with Danny. I kept up to date with it, but not enough to actually tune in every night. But this has got me back. You know, like just watching that first episode, like I'm going to be watching live. I'll be watching it as soon as I can because you're right. Having the mixed contestants is great. I only wish that it was a full all-star cast because there's so many more people from the 10 and 9 days who could easily be delivering just as much as what Reggie and Tim and co are doing.
You need some for the next series, mate. You got to keep some powder dry. Aaron, on the ratings front, you are our you and Malka are our ratings gurus. You like to look at all the facts and figures. Anything we should know about the previous week?
No, it's all pretty obvious. It's been one-way traffic of 7 at the moment with The Voice and then winning 5 p.m. Sunrise, the morning show, multi-channels and all that. But 9 have been really consistent with the demos, and that's what they chase. You mentioned that in the intro. So the only thing for me is I don't think the end product and the ratings match with MasterChef. I think it's a great show and well put together. And 450,000 a night seems pretty disappointing, and there's not a huge uptick in total TV ratings either. So, but the cheap seats is hilarious, absolutely hilarious. Watch it every week. And have you been paying attention back Monday week? So that should show a little bit of life for 10 as well.
While I've got you, Aaron, last week we touched on Reg Tam and the footprint of 7. And I actually, for full disclosure, I cut out probably about 15 minutes of us waffling on. I've got to be honest here. I'm not really across Reg Tam, and I understand how ratings work, obviously, but I had a belief that 7 had a bigger footprint, and 7 and its affiliates had a bigger footprint than the other networks, which is why 7 was favoured. You've done some research this week, and that is not the case.
Yeah, that's right. This is going to be really boring for some people in the podcast.
Give us a 30-second spiel.
But there's some confusion in how ratings may be skewed in relation to some networks having more reach than others. So I'll put this in the easiest form I can and say that
make
there are two
it so even Robbo can understand it.
All right. What? So there's two types of reach.
Joke. Meant me, Robbo.
So there's network reach, as in what network or company has what amount of reach, and then there's program reach, as you know what each program, you know, certain program reaches, you know, its audience in Australia. Yeah. So the most important thing to understand is that these two reaches are completely different and have nothing to do with each other. So between 7 West Media, 9 Entertainment Company, and Paramount, 7 West Media have more reach than their rivals in regional areas now that they've acquired Prime. So 7 own about 6 out of the 11 regional markets, and 9 only have 2.
Right.
So Kerry Stokes does have, as a company, has a bigger footprint and voice across Australia.
But 9 obviously has affiliation agreements with Wynn. So,
with Wynn, yeah.
So this is my question. This is the key point, Aaron, that once you answer this, I'm in a good place. Through affiliation, which Paul Keating introduced in, I want to say 93, I think it was in the 90s, every market, do they have 3 commercial TV stations, meaning that 7, 9 and 10 have affiliations everywhere, no one has a bigger footprint than the other?
That's correct. So there's 11 markets, and all 11 markets, regional markets, have some form or another of 7, 9 and 10, whether it's owned by Wind, Southern Cross, whatever.
How does that play in areas where Impaja is? Is that an additional, or does that use a bit of programming from 9 or whoever and their own programming?
Oh, no, now we're getting into it. So there's some areas that have joint ventures and joint licenses. So some markets will be owned by the same company. Like, so the company owns 7, 9 and 10 in that market. Some have
three channels are broadcast, even though
the same company? But there are three full channels. No one is actually doing like a hybrid version of 7, 9 and 10. So there's around, you know, I'm just using the Australian Bureau of Statistics, there's around 7 million viewers in regional areas, and all 7 million viewers have access to Lego Masters, to The Voice and to MasterChef, whether they watch it on 9, NBN, Southern Cross, Win or whatever. So when the ratings come out, all regional TAM are looking at is how many of those 7 million viewers are watching Lego Masters or The Voice. That they're not even looking at the company.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the company. For me, it was always whether there's an area that only has the 7 signal or, you know, but that doesn't seem to be the case from what you're saying. Everyone.
No, so every single market, every single person in Australia that form these regional bases for ratings have access to a 7 channel, a 9 channel and a 10 channel.
Okay, great. That clears it up, because I've got to be honest, when I was neck deep in television and working inside it, back then we only cared about the metro figures. Nobody cared about regional figures. Regional figures and having that national number is really only a product of the last few years, 5 years maybe, but it was certainly never the focus for the first 60 years of TV.
Yeah, and let me just add. So the ratings reports that we're getting from OzTAM obviously just have the 5 city metro. Let me tell you, by the 1st of January next year, those ratings that you receive will only be regional. Will be Australia wide. So the change is coming.
But who's agreed to that? Like, I actually think there's a place for 5 city metro, because the networks sell advertising based on the 5. Cap city stations they own, and I don't like that at all. I like having both figures, but of course that seems like a blatant play to up the figures and make everything appear bigger. And we know that James Warburton didn't want overnight figures released. He only wanted plus 7 figures to include catch up, so that all of a sudden free to air TV numbers would rise. The simple fact is that linear broadcast still needs to be measured in a way that's acceptable. I think that I'm calling bullshit on that.
The total TV ratings are regional, and then the overnights, it needs to be the same. And second of all, it doesn't matter where you live. You should be counted. We're all Australian. It doesn't matter whether you live in Sydney or whether you live in the region.
I understand the spin, and I've heard that line. I've had Michael Pell on this very podcast saying that exact same thing, and he did convince me to some extent about that. But I come back to, it just seems to me that when figures were high in 5 cap cities, nobody gave a fuck about regional. But all of a sudden, we need to bolster free-to-air numbers. And so, come in, my darling regional people. We love you. We always loved you. The simple fact is they're being used to up the figures. And this idea that it's only going to go to national figures, it's a rort.
Don't you think that internet sales and advertising sales and things like that would also factor into this and the desire for this? You know, if you're talking 5 city metros, you've got all those big retailers covered, which you don't necessarily have in some of the regional areas. But with, you know, web sales, you know, skyrocketing.
Mate, I'm not saying there's not a place for it. I'm not saying that at all. And I understand that TV does, there absolutely needs to be a consideration for total TV. Totally buy that. We're reporting those total TV figures and we see changes. But this to me, this reporting of national, a year later, we won't get overnights and it'll be plus 7, just so that they, a program that's getting 300, what will the figures be by then? 300,000, you know, for 500,000 for a good product. All of a sudden, we're only seeing it 7 days later when it gets up to 600,000.
Why do you care about the capital city figure? Why is that important to you? Why don't you care that 1.2 million Australians watch The Voice, for example? Why do you care that 900,000 of them were in the five capital cities.
Does Channel 10 own regional stations?
No.
Right. So Channel 10 own five capital stations, right? As per Nine, as per Seven. So you have an even playing field right there. Their commercial revenue, and putting aside affiliation agreements, their commercial revenue comes from the advertising sales within those programs in those five capital cities. I think it's complete bullshit and disingenuous to say we're not going to give you metropolitan figures.
But that's for advertising. Why, in terms of ratings, why don't you want to know that 1.2 million Australians are watching a show? I know the breakdown.
I just want the other information as well.
Why?
But what they want to do is take that away
so that I'm reporting something going with Coles or something.
Sorry?
Like, have you got something going on with Coles that you need to know, you know, the figures for Metro so that you know where the advertising money's going? Why would that be?
You don't know where all my fingers are and all the fingers and pies I have fingers in.
Gross.
Well, yes.
I won't tell you where my fingers go.
I tell you what it is for me, as someone who just followed ratings very loosely growing up, and it was just the five-city metro. So for me, if they were to get rid of it, like, I just wouldn't know any different. I'm a creature of habit. We all are. I think that's possibly another thing that plays into it, is that we're also accustomed to getting the overnight five-city metro. Whether that matters in total TV or not, I'm just interested in what that very first figure is. And if for years it's been the overnight, then I want that to stay. I want to know if a show is flopping at 300,000, even if it does great on catch-up and gets to a million. It's just it's that initial thing, because that's what I've known for the last, 10 years of my life? Yeah.
100%. 100%. This is a diddling of the figures to make ourselves look bigger. This is like Robbo when he takes a close-up pitch. No.
I was nodding along as you were saying that. I wish we had cameras here. I try and always make it bigger than what it is.
All right, still ahead on TV Black Box. A new host for the 7:30 Report is announced.
No, that makes us look bad. It's not the 7:30 Report. It hasn't been for years. 7:30.
Nobody cares.
No. If I was listening to this, I always think about when newspapers and stuff say, like, the 7:30 Report or whatever. Nah.
All right.
This is why he wants the five city capital things, because he's still hanging on to the 7:30 Report. Do you still call it Social Security instead of Centrelink? Oh, my God. This is why.
Back to the coming up promo, because coming up, still ahead, I mean, on TV Black Box, I'm all a fluster. We will find out who the new host is of 7:30. We'll also discuss Kylie and Jason coming back to Neighbours and what happened when those scenes were shot. You're listening to TV Black Box.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And now it's time for Hatches and Dispatches. Walkley Award-winning journalist Sarah Ferguson has been named the new host of the ABC's 7:30. Lee Sales announced her departure from the program in February. She'll stay in the chair until after the federal election, and congratulations to Sarah.
As I predicted on this very podcast months ago.
Yes. Neighbours. Everybody needs good neighbours.
It's the ultimate homecoming, with Neighbours set to broadcast their final episode later this year. Two very big characters are returning. Scott and Charlene, otherwise known as Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan, are returning to the soap that made them a household name. They'll be part of one of the biggest goodbyes in Aussie TV history. The final episode will air on Monday, August 1st on 10 Peach.
Can I quickly say something? Sorry, Sarah, to interrupt. If that doesn't get put on the primary channel, it is a crime against humanity and against Australian television.
Yes. Guy Sebastian and his former manager are back in court. And the message? Never underestimate the power of a Sebastian seduce. That's according to Dominic Toomey SE, who told the court perhaps the authorities and police were willfully blind by the star power of Guy. Titus Day is accused of embezzling more than $1 million of the idol's money in a claim dating back to July 2018. The trial continues. And that is this week's Hatches and Dispatches. Back to you, Rob.
All right, now it's time to open the TV binge box and find out what everyone's been watching. Sarah, we'll say it for you. NCIS.
Yes. And spoiler alert, Ziva comes back. And my husband was terrified that that was going to shift my wardrobe back to...
I don't know what that means.
You're only up to that.
Ziva.
No idea.
Yes, I'm only up to that because Netflix only had till season 15 and we had to go to Paramount Plus to get new NCIS.
Fair enough.
Never watched it.
Anyway, so the only thing we watched on Netflix was Ozark. We've just started Ozark. So I know apparently the ending sucks. No,
don't talk about it.
Yeah,
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. Yeah. I don't want to hear. And then Flack on Amazon with Anna Paquin. I've watched the first couple of episodes of that. And then, just because I was bored and I was flicking through what other little apps that we have, I found Sea Patrol.
Ah,
oh,
Popcorn Flix. That wasn't good.
And so I'm like, wait, this is if NCIS Sydney is going to be something, and everyone kept saying it was going to be Water Rats. No, it's going to be Sea Patrol. And that is a very special early 2000s.
Love it. Yeah. Aaron, what have you been watching?
Oh, a few things. I ended up watching Gaslit because Philip was talking about it last week. I was going to wait for a few more episodes to come out, but I thought I'd watch it. Julia Roberts. Some shows I watch in the background, and I did that, and this is only okay. But I thought, I'm going to give this a proper go and watch it, you know, properly, and it's brilliant. Yeah, you really have to get involved in every scene, every part of dialogue, so it's actually really good. It's the one with Julia Roberts, so that's awesome. Big Brother, so I watched the first two episodes, and as Rob and Matthew said, it's absolutely epic. So I can reveal to readers that TV Black Box will be hosting an after show podcast on the nights when someone is evicted, so listeners will be able to hear from the evicted housemate directly after the episode airs.
Awesome.
on TV, which would be good. The cheap seats, well, I've sort of mentioned before, that's been really good. The voice has been awesome. And then I took one of Sarah's recommendations, being Jackass Forever, because she mentioned that there was a lot
there was a bag of dicks.
Yeah, and all that. It was vile. It was disgusting. Aww. It was putrid. It was awful. It was cringeworthy. But you just can't look away, can you?
Yeah, no, you just cannot stop watching.
You sit there with your hands like that, but you're still watching through your fingers. You think, why? What's the point of doing that? It's just, but it is really disgusting. But yeah, it's
so. I was reading an article, and they said that the whole point of Jackass from the very beginning was to make heterosexual men feel uncomfortable.
It works.
It's worked with Rob, then, hasn't it?
I've never watched it. I don't know, but just the bits I've seen, it seems like TikTok videos of people lighting their ass on fire. But I could be wrong. I don't really know.
Weirdly, that Aaron said that straight after Sarah said it last week that he went to watch it, because I did the same thing, but I couldn't find it anywhere. You had to pay for it. So, Aaron, did you pay for it?
No, I live streamed it to him.
I will be paying for it in heaven.
He's got
I can
many
tell
subscriptions,
you.
Robert.
No, Robert, we just open up Facebook and I just stream it to him. Yeah.
Interesting to hear that Aaron took on Sarah's suggestions. I will be honest, I don't think I've ever heard anyone take on any of my viewing suggestions, but what have you been watching?
Wheel of Fortune.
I watched Is It
on,
Cake?
Matthew's got his hand up.
I watched
hang on.
Is It Cake?
Did you?
I started it, and Rob, I have to disagree with you. It wasn't working for me. The host
Sorry,
is just.
Sorry, we're going through a tunnel, Matthew. We've lost connection.
The host is
Matthew,
too much. Too much.
Lost him from the podcast.
Too much.
But maybe Matthew didn't understand the concept properly. There's like one is a cake, and one is not a cake. Oh, it's so interesting.
We've gone off the rails without Mog. Robbo,
did
what
you
have
see
you been
the LinkedIn thing that I sent you about? Is it cake? It was like not actually the TV show. It was like someone was bragging about they'd made like a Gucci briefcase or whatever that looked like a cake.
Don't,
and so I
don't
sent
don't contact
it to
me
you.
Through LinkedIn. I never look at it.
Open your bloody LinkedIn and look at it. I sent it specifically because it was,
actually,
is it cake?
I tell a lie. I did see something from you, and I went, oh, get to that later, surely. It can't be that important. She knows how to contact me many other ways. If it was important, it wouldn't be through LinkedIn.
Yeah, call him on the 1960s red phone that he's still got.
Robbo!
I realised last week and for a few weeks, I haven't actually been watching a lot of, free-to-air TV, especially since I'm also on a podcast of most of that. So I started watching a few things, went to SBS, watched a documentary called The Abused about domestic violence, and they followed two people in Britain who within a matter of weeks had to report some pretty serious domestic violence, and especially since we're going through such an epidemic of that in Australia. It's called The Abused. It's on SBS. It is brilliant. Also watched Life After the Oasis, which is a follow-up to a documentary 10 years ago with the Salvation Army and a program they run in the middle of Sydney for disaffected youth. It is a really, really great show and just shows you what wonderful work that both SBS does and also the Salvation Army. So check that
out. Nothing funny there so far. That's actually all good suggestions and serious stuff. We're seeing another sign.
He's getting to Jackass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I couldn't watch Jackass. I went to that. The other thing I watched was Star Trek The Motion Picture, which has been redone, director's cut, on Paramount Plus. Everyone was saying it was boring and slow. I thought it was fantastic. I really loved it. Also watched Lisa Curry's Australian Story, which went to air last week. A brilliant, brilliant show. Jeez, those people know how to produce wonderful programming.
Not only produce, but... they absolutely get the best out of these people, you know. Like, that was a great episode, I'll give you that.
They really do. It's a great show. Yeah, wonderful. So you can check that out on ABC iView. I also watched The Cannibal Warlords of Liberia. How white am I? The Cannibal Warlords of Liberia on Vice. Really good stuff. That's on the internet, but, you know, it's still kind of TV. And also, like Rob mentioned earlier, Piers Morgan Uncensored. Look, I don't agree with everything that he says, and nor do I have to, but I enjoy him. I think he's entertaining. I laugh at some of what he says. I cringe at some of what he says. But it's, you know, and he says that he's here to make entertaining TV. I can't watch Fox News, and I won't. But that's a man that I can and watch and kind of nitpick about stuff that I like and don't like. But I enjoyed that, and that's on Sky.
Love
News.
It.
So you're the other one.
Philip. What have you been watching, sir?
Well, I did watch Piers Morgan's, the first episode of his new show, The Interview with Donald Trump, because you recommended it, Rob. It went against every fibre of my being. I did last 7 minutes. I thought it could have been Barnaby Joyce with his red face screaming at the yellow man, but it turned out it was Piers Morgan. I don't know. I just don't have time to have somebody screaming at me from TV. I put up with it enough from you on this.
Yeah. How true.
You are playing into a stereotype about me, Philip, and people are going to think it's true. So shut up.
And then I also hesitated to even bring this one up. I've been watching it for a couple of weeks, but I know it'll annoy you because you could look at it and think it's the wokest show ever because it is a show called Gentleman Jack on Foxtel. And it's a very unusual show because Cerin Jones, who has been in a bunch of brilliant stuff, but I know her as from a police show called Scott and Bailey, some people might remember. Anyhow, she's just a really good actress. So she plays a lesbian in 1830s Yorkshire. Sorry, Robert.
Sorry. No, that was just leaves a foul taste in my mouth. Go on.
I want to correct you there because I know you think I'm – I know you think – you have perceptions about me. I am interested in seeing that show. It actually looks good. I haven't watched it yet, but it actually looks very
well,
good.
Well, look, I didn't love it from the first episode, but I thought I'd stick with it. It's essentially – you've got to chuck out all those ideas about how it's gender fluid and all that stuff. It's essentially a really good period drama. She plays a woman who happens to be a lesbian. But she's more like a female version of a male industrialist. She's very powerful. She's very, you know, she's developed a walk like a man. The costumes, the settings, everything is great about it. Well worth sticking with. And then I also had a really interesting experience on the weekend. A show called 10% dropped on Stan, which is the British version of Call My Agent, which is the French show about a talent agency that everyone was raving about 3 years ago. I think it's in about its third or fourth series, the French version. So the English version is basically a copycat of it, and from the outrage on Facebook from people that love Call My Agent. Apparently I've done myself a favour by watching 10% first. I've since watched a bit of Call My Agent and it's brilliant. Has a bunch of amazing guest stars in both series. Call My Agent is on Netflix, and 10%, which stars Jack Davenport, amongst others, is on Stan.
Sorry, is it a drama or a reality show?
10%. It's a drama, but it's a drama set in a talent agency. So you have a lot of big guests. Imagine you had, you know, a very major
talent. It's a bit like Entourage.
A little bit like it has that feel about it.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, no, it's a 10. I love 10%, and I love Call My Agent even more. Though, of course, you've got to tolerate the French or the English subtitles on a French show.
Matthew, what have you been watching?
Just a few things. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that we were catching up on The Walking Dead. We're still slowly doing that, hoping to get up to it before the next part of the last season goes to air later this year. Also, obviously, Big Brother Australia, check that out. That's looking fantastic. Can't wait to watch that as we roll on. Also, another version of Big Brother Canada, which is just about to finish at the end of this week. And I believe episodes go on there every week on 7+, but it's a little bit delayed from when it does air in Canada. That season has been quite good. Fun fact, Tim Dormer, who's obviously from the Australian version, also competed in Canada. He got third. He was very close to winning. And I remember watching his season. It's the reason why I started watching Big Brother Canada as well. So, and that's been really good. But that comes to an end at the end of this week. And then the only other thing is, of course, Survivor. The only reason why I want to highlight, particularly this week, is that in last week's episode, there was a really great conversation, because obviously Survivor's always been about being a microcosm of society and bringing it down. What would these people do for money, and how do you deal with different people of different walks of life? There was a really great conversation about race and how everyone has a 1 in 18 chance, but some people's 1 in 18 chance is a bit bigger mm-hmm. or smaller than others based on different ways of how you are in life and then the people that you meet. And obviously CBS is committed to 50% diversity. And this is the second season that we've seen that. But there was a great conversation about race and why seeing multiple black contestants go out, despite not for racist reasons, but just It hits them a bit harder than what it might for other cultures, especially Caucasians. So it was really great. So if anyone could even just check out those last 5 minutes, last 10 minutes of that episode, it's just go in with an open mind. It's caused a lot of controversy, but if you go in with an open mind and you just try and not put yourself in those shoes and you try and take it from what those women were saying, yeah, it was quite powerful. And just really goes to show why Survivor's great.
Okay. Oh, thank you, mate. I've got to give a big shout out to The Cheap Seats. I liked, sort of like the show when it first started. I thought it had a lot of potential. I thought there were some problems with the show. I watched a couple of episodes. It didn't immediately get better and I dropped off. Malt kept saying, you can't have an opinion about it because you need to watch it. And I said, well, I'm like a viewer. I've tried it. I sampled it. I moved on. But Malk has raved about this show a lot, and so it actually did convince me to go and have another look. And I watched the premiere episode, and I've got to say, it was really enjoyable, fun TV. I really think they've fixed the issues I had with it. It's a much more it's a sharper show and not relying on so much New Zealand content, which was one of my issues. It seems to have found its groove with the segments it's got. I just really enjoyed it, and I'll be back. The only reason I didn't watch it last night was because I was at the a screening of Doctor Strange, and so a big shout out to Shout PR because there was a whole debacle where I didn't have tickets, but they got me tickets, and thank you very much. I'm so grateful because I got to see it. But I've got to say, The Cheap Seats, well done. The producers worked on it. The big issue now is getting viewers to sample it again. That is always the difficult thing with this, but hopefully word of mouth helps it this year and it can grow that audience. It's a really good show and well worth watching.
It is winning its time slot the first couple of episodes, so that's good.
Oh, then I'll just shut up because it's obviously doing well. But obviously Malts raved about it enough. See the power of TV Black Box. We talk about it, it becomes number one. Well done, TV Black Box. Well done, Malt. All right. I've also been watching Gogglebox, a bit of classic Doctor Who. All right. John Oliver, there are a couple of shows I need to talk about. Sometimes a show should just do one series with a very smart concept and move on. Your Honours, I present Russian Doll as Exhibit A. Fantastic first season, loved it, couldn't get enough. I've binged it multiple times. I've seen that series three or four times. I have watched fully the second series. It is, I reckon they were on drugs when they wrote it.
Whoa.
I think that I need to give one little spoiler. I love time travel stories, anything. I can always follow it, and I did manage to follow it, but Jesus Christ, even for me at times, it was like running a marathon trying to follow the storyline and the thought and the acting. It's all these long sentences, and it's almost like the actress is forgetting the words and I'm just gonna mumble over bits that I can't remember the dialogue to. So not only can you not hear what she's saying, you can't understand what she's saying, and it's all this self-referential philosophical bullshit. And I don't know what the point of this second season was, other than it did really well. We won a second season. How do we take what was a unique concept and try to do something else with these characters? It was all a bit wicky-wacky. The rules changed, and then, you know, the rules that they'd established in episode one didn't follow through the whole series. How did she pick where she was going? There are so many unanswered questions. And it was confusing and a real disappointment. So sometimes one great series, leave it at that. Do a George Costanza. You've cracked the big joke, get a laugh, leave the meeting. Bullshit, the game show, is the new sensation, I have to say, that I am loving on Netflix. This is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire full of dumb people.
Great.
Finally, The Baby on Binge. I don't think this is out yet. I've been watching preview screeners of it. I mentioned this a month or so ago that I watched the first minute that was a teaser and that I was enthralled. I finally got back to it, and when I watched the full episode, I had to watch all six episodes in a weekend. It had me hooked. It was one of those shows that I couldn't be on the phone second screening watching it. I literally had to put the phone down. It takes you on an unexpected journey. It is bloody brilliant. I feel like I'm doing Philip Kosh reviews and Malk reviews here because I've gone on so long with my binge box, but I had a good time. What can I tell you? The Baby, coming soon to Binge.
It started on the 25th of April, Rob.
And I went looking for that show after you recommended it last time, Rob. So I'm pleased you brought it up again. I thought, well, I'm obviously stupid because I just can't find it.
Brave.
No. I knew it was a preview screening, and I don't think they finally finished all the episodes because there were still in the previews. The last few episodes had some technical notes on the screen ADR cues and stuff like that. So I think it's still. Is it being released weekly, Aaron?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. It's a great series. Like, seriously, brilliant. All right, that brings us to the end of TV Black Box. I think we've gone a little bit over time tonight. Oh, Malky, we thought this would be a fast run without you. I'm Rob McKnight. Thanks for your company. Sarah, Aaron, Philip, Robbo and Matthew, thank you for joining us. We will see you again next week. Don't forget, for the very latest TV news and exclusive, it's where people in the TV industry get their news, go to tvblackbox.com.au.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.